That is true. He says it right. That's my right. I say the things that I think. I have a lot of liberty on the air, and it's still a free country, so I have that right, and nobody's responsible for the information I put out. Meanwhile, we'll begin officially with the program this evening. It is broadcast number 618. It's October the 10th, 1983. And before I begin, I want to ask if anybody who takes that broadcast or has the tapes or sheets or is expertise at indexing. I have the list of sheets that accompany the broadcast going back as far as 1977. And I want to get them out as a book, but I also want to use them for references because often there's past programs where I referred to certain incidences. And I want to be able to pull those out. And I will pay somebody if they are good at indexing and want a job indexing these sheets. They could do that. They can call me. My number is listed in the book. Or if you're farther away, you can write to me. I really need these indexed in a professional manner where I have access to the books I've mentioned, the chronology of the years I have had on the air, different names and incidences, all the names indexed in a proper way where I can get my fingers on them. Now, this last week, Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler, ordered the copy of last broadcast, number 617. He ordered a set for every member of Congress, for the House of Representatives and for the Senate. That's about 535 cassettes that are going out this week. He's serious about it. He began to take the tapes, and he thought that was an important broadcast. That's the one last week about Lieutenant General Graham of the Defense Intelligence Agency and his links with Fritz Kramer in Washington, D.C., and also his links to Western Goals and Larry McDonald and his links to John Reese and Larry McDonald. And then there's a section on Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn with Western Goals, and Roy Cohn is written up in the Torbett document with the role with Permandex in the assassination of John Kennedy. He helped prosecute the Rosenbergs. He had the House Un-American Activities for Senator Joe McCarthy. And the whole era is wrapped up in these particular names that are very important, Roy Cohn and General Graham and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger, the protege of Fritz Kramer and so forth. And it goes into Larry McDonald and his links to the military and also to the great blackmailers, the people like Roy Cohn who know all the scandals. Roy Cohn was the attorney for Alfred Bloomingdale, and his friend Mr. Mitchelson was the attorney for Vicky Morgan. And so Larry Flint sent a check of several thousand dollars plus more, almost $3,000, to get the tapes duplicated and to be sent to every member of Congress. This time last year on broadcast number 566, that was October the 11th, 1982, I was talking about Fritz Kramer and the Pentagon again. I had written to the Subcommittee on Immigration and Refugees and International Law, that was just a year ago, that I wrote to the chairman and every member of this subcommittee because they had hearings on Nazi war criminals and their illegal entry into the United States. And I asked them, if perchance a criminal named number 33 at the Dachau trial did come to the United States, and if he was the head of the Pentagon at this time, the mentor of Henry Kissinger, where does he fit into this? Now, I sent letters. I have the letters, the postal certifications. I didn't get an answer from one of those members of the Subcommittee on Immigration and Refugees. And I asked them some very serious questions. I gave a lot of references, but I got nothing from a single one of them. We also talked last year on the fairy tale business, an article in Forbes magazine about Grace Kelly. It was just at the time that she had been murdered and her role at 20th Century Fox, which they mentioned that she was on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox that was purchased by Marvin Davis in August 81. And I talked about Henry Kissinger. You see, all these names, as you're catching on now, are beginning to really overlap the organizations, the institutions, to Western Goals, to the LAPD. But I talked about Henry Kissinger and Edward Bennett Williams being put on the board of 20th Century Fox, along with Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission, and John Hinckley Jr. was represented by Edward Bennett Williams. That was a year ago I was talking about that. Well, this past week, Mark Rich, who owns 50% of 20th Century Fox, to update you on the latest story, was officially indicted. He was being investigated by the grand jury. The Washington Post has a front-page story. Jury indicts Mark Rich and others in the largest tax evasion case. And it tells how they have named him and his friend Pincus Green and another member of his group, Clyde Meltzer, M-E-L-T-Z-E-R. Now, they have charged him with some very serious charges, 51-count indictment. It's not just for not paying taxes. It's not just tax evasion indictment. It goes a lot further. And what the grand jury said, besides concealing the $100 million in taxes, a nice round sum, that he was illegally buying more than $200 million worth of oil from Iran after President Jimmy Carter banned the trade with that nation during the hostage crisis. The president means nothing, whether it's John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy at the time of the Bay of Pigs, that there's a hidden government behind my back. The hidden government is there, and these people issue an order, no trading with Iran while the hostages are there. So Mark Rich, a fellow who puts Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and William Rogers, all of them together at the 20th Century Fox, they're all part and parcel of the Iranian situation, making profits of it, millions of dollars for themselves. And who pays the difference? The oil prices go up, the profits go in their pocket. Well, they were sending, Rich was sending $200 million worth of oil from Iran after Carter banned the trade with the nation. And at first they weren't clear where it was going. But the United States banks, seven of them this week, have tried to stop the government from trying up $100 million of Mark Rich's money because they claim that the banks need the money. The United States banks transferred funds from the United States, identical to what Hitler did just when the war was over in Germany, transferred from the United States, and it ended up in the hands of the National Iranian Oil Company. And then they were selling it to South Africa, which was illegal. And they were sending it from Soviet bloc nations to South Africa and from Iran to the United States and Europe during the embargo. So this is the activity of Mark Rich with his heavy cast of characters, including Grace Kelly on the board of that studio. And now he's taken residence in Spain. He said he's not an American citizen. He was a Belgian-born American citizen. Now he's off in Spain because he doesn't want to count to the law, and you can figure out why. So that's the latest on the oil scandal of Mark Rich. Now, Cardinal Cook passed away last week, just this last Thursday, and there isn't too much to say about that. When his name surfaced in a political sense, well, all Catholic cardinals are political, at the time John DeLorean was arrested because he was seeing him so frequently. But in an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, it said that his funeral will be attended by former President Richard Nixon, as well as U.S. senators, including Alfonso de Amato from New York City. Now, Nixon was heavily involved with the Vatican, with Michael Sindona, with Paul Marcinkus. You read the Vatican connection. That book goes back 10 years, and Sindona funding Nixon $1 million during the Republican campaign in 1968. He's been heavily funded for his activities by the Vatican, and that's probably because of his role since 1946 of bringing the Nazis from Project Paperclip into the United States. But this New York Senator D'Amato is not only close, of course, to the Cardinal, but his name surfaced again this week in terms of the Flight 007 and a pathetic situation that he's put his name to as a propaganda ploy, which proves that the Vatican that funded Richard Nixon and the various candidates, Licio Gelli funded Ronald Reagan and so forth, the Vatican is a very political animal, and they get into situations such as provocation, such as 007. The Washington Times had an article this week, September 28th, that a 28-year-old man from Salem, Oregon, has enlisted the aid of Vice President Bush and his area congressman to sell buttons to commemorate the 007 that went down in the Soviet Union. Now, if you want to buy a button or donate cash directly, you send your contribution to, this is the address, USSR, United States Shall Remember, P.O. Box 13916, Salem, Oregon, 97309. That reminds me of Julie Eisenhower when her father was vice president for 8 years, and they left the White House. She slipped a note under the rug and said, "We will return." And then a little while later, she was back, and her father was president of the United States. Now, the fund for this operation also is carried in New York. They have assistance in New York under Alphonse D'Amato. I have trouble always pronouncing his name. It's not that hard. And the proceeds go to the U.S. National Bank account in Oregon, but the foundation is set up for the Korean victims in care of Representative Alphonse D'Amato, Republican New York. The address is this: the Soviet Massacre Assistance Fund, P.O. Box 007. Isn't that cute? 007, Washington, D.C., 20013. I think you should send for the button because they'll be collector's items. I have a button collection, and I think that's pretty neat. But they'll be wearing these buttons for a long time unless we do something about exposing what really happened on Flight 007, just as some people have been working very hard to expose the lie that Aja, who shot the Pope and tried to kill him, was working with the Bulgarian CIA, and I'll go into that in a moment. Now, Cardinal Medeiros died in Boston. He was active in civil rights, and with his death, at least four appointments for the Pope to make cardinals in the United States right after he made the appointment of the Jesuit, the head of Jesuits, and he forced the former head to resign, which is never done. A Jesuit head lives through his lifetime like a justice of the Supreme Court. But there was an article about Cardinal Medeiros in the paper regarding his death in the Washington Post, and it said that when he was selected by Pope Paul VI, that's Montini, from the Milan Mafia, when he was selected to become a cardinal in Boston and was sent there to replace Mr. Cushman, the Cardinal Cushing, rather, from Boston, the Boston church there had a debt of $42 million. That wasn't so long ago, 1970. That was just 12, 13 years ago. And they had a debt of $42 million, which is quite a lot of money. And he was brought in. Goodness knows where that money went, because the Vatican has paid for politicians or men. Who knows if it goes into the election of D'Amato? Who knows where it goes? I'm not saying it did. We don't know. As a matter of fact, a year ago this evening, I was talking about the scandal of Cardinal Cody in Chicago, and when the information came out about the woman that he had on full salary and the location of a special office or condominium down in Florida, New York Times last year had a story about the missing millions that Cardinal Cody was responsible for from the First National Bank and the Continental Bank in Illinois. The Continental was tied up with the Tylenol scandal a year ago that hasn't been covered. So he had missing millions when he left there, and when Cushing left Boston and Medeiros took over, there was $42 million there. And it's really imperative to know. We'll never know, of course. If Sedona gives Nixon $1 million, did each of the senators and House of Representatives who vote like knuckleheads, what did they get? I mean, you couldn't handpick a bunch of jerks that we have in Washington unless somebody was paying their way, because you can't vote en masse without any reason or logic as we get closer to nuclear war. Now, regarding the South Korean leaders that were killed just yesterday, there's a story in the San Francisco Chronicle that the president of Korea immediately blamed the North Korean agents. It's in the San Francisco Chronicle, October the 10th, and it's a wire service story. And also it's in the New York Times. And Chun told the Burmese government that he hoped the investigation and the arrest of the culprits will come soon and they will be severely punished. He should punish them while he exposes the plot instigated by North Korea. Another instant solution. The moment Diem was murdered in South Korea, and his partner, Mr. Nu, the husband of Madame Nu, living in Bel Air, she says, a communist killed my husband. The moment John Kennedy died, the John Birch Society that brought their 29 people from Munich, Germany, out to Dallas for that explicit occasion were publishing, a communist killed the president. First, they had banners wanted for treason because he was too far left. And then after he was dead and conveniently out of the way, and their oil tax depletion allowance wouldn't be put on their head, and the nuclear test ban treaty they could turn over, and all the dirty tricks they could get into once he was dead, then they had, the communists killed him. He worked for the communists, but he's killed by the commies. When Korean Airline 003 went down, immediately the communists did it. Not that it was a provocation, knowing that territory without response would require death. when Aquino died in the Philippines, Marco, the first day and even yesterday, I cut out an article, the communists killed him. The man who shot Aquino in the Philippines worked for the Air Force, worked for the mafia, but here is Marco saying the communists killed him. So now Mr. Chun is saying the North Koreans did it. Get them. And it's like an order to Burma. You've got to get them. Now, a little history, a two-minute capsule of history in Korea. In June 29th of 1979, Jimmy Carter, the same president that ordered the embargo stopped of the oil that Mark Rich and Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer ignored. On June 29th, 1979, Jimmy Carter ordered the withdrawal of troops in South Korea. We had 32,000 combat troops. You know what the cost of that is. And he ordered them brought home. And in October 26, 1979, Park Chung-hee was at a dinner party with, he was the president of Korea. He was with the head of his Korean CIA, which is set up by our CIA, and he was killed by Kim Jae-kyu, K-Y-U. That's October, just a few months after the president ordered our withdrawal. And then in comes the current president, Chun Doo-hwan, and he takes over. Now, in between those two times, when Jimmy Carter said withdraw the troops, this is the time when all the Korea Gate was going on, the bribing of the congressman, Leon Jaworski covering it up for, as he did the House Select, the Warren Commission, and also for the Senate Watergate hearings. They brought in Leon Jaworski of the CIA and got everyone off of the charges of Tongson Park Ping, off the congressman, providing him a second wives and mistresses and so forth. So June, Carter wanted the troops out. In August, the Korea Gate scandal was finalized and coming to a head. And in October, the president of Korea was offed by the head of the Korean CIA, and then the Army General took over, and this same Army General worked with the pilot of 007, who was also in the Army. So when you want to get the troops out, and troops are good business, and you need them in South Korea, you create a crisis, which they did, like the Gary Powers U-2 incident over Soviet Union to break up Dantan. When you want to remove the U.S. troops from their foothold halfway around the world, just create an incident, and then the troops stay. And Jimmy Carter didn't have much effect on Korean politics any more than he did on the oil crisis, by which certain people accrued millions and millions of dollars. Now, last week I was talking about the General Graham and his political action committee and offering up front $1 million to candidates who would go for the space weapons. And this last September, the 2nd, last month, Jack Anderson had a story, Intriguing Tale of Oil Tycoons' Machinations. This is about Esso Oil, Tom Pappas' oil company, and an interesting $15 million deal. Pappas was a major fundraiser and contributor for the 1968 campaign of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew, his running mate, who was to be the highest elected official of the Greek-American background. And in Greece, the Esso people put up money for Spiro Agnew. Jack Anderson said the Pappas enterprises were alleged to be fronts for the CIA operation in Greece when the CIA put in the military junta, put them into power. More serious were the charges that the CIA funds found their way back through Pappas to the United States into the Nixon-Agnew campaign fund. Now, Jack Anderson said last month, if Nixon got his hands on U.S. Treasury money indirectly through the CIA, it's a scandal of the first magnitude. And he tells how the money trail led from the CIA to its Greek counterpart, the KYP, then to Tom Pappas, back to the United States, into the Nixon-Agnew campaign. And furthermore, he says that Larry O'Brien, at the time of Watergate and even before, who was chairman of the Democratic National Committee, wouldn't release this information and kept it secret. Nixon could have been defeated, except that the Democrats work for the assassination teams, and they have since John Kennedy was killed. I just read this week that another top-level person working with Richard Nixon, I have to think of who it was now, is now working with Robert Gray, the public relations man. Oh, Mankiewicz, Frank Mankiewicz, who was one of the people that John Kennedy trusted, who has always worked with intelligence operations. Frank Mankiewicz is now working for Bob Gray, the man whose offices were shared with Edwin Wilson when George Bush was in the CIA. These are the kind of Democrats you have, Mankiewicz and Larry O'Brien or Hubert Humphrey, who were all paid out of the same till. Larry O'Brien, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, had a press conference and released a statement demanding that Nixon and Agnew explain their relationship. I didn't see it. Did you see it? I didn't see what he said, but I knew that it was happening because in my first published article for The Realist in 1972, after Richard Nixon was his men were apprehended at the Watergate Hotel, I compared the military coup that took place in Greece by the Greek military junta to the plans of Squad 19 to overthrow the government, the United States government, in 1972 at the Republican conventions in San Diego. And I wrote that the CIA that helped fund canceling elections in Greece offered Richard Nixon the money he needed for his 1968 election if he took political unknown Spiro Agnew as vice president. And I said that money to manage an election campaign is difficult enough to separate. But when you mix your CIA funds with Republican or Democratic money, how do you know that all the agents, all the candidates aren't CIA? In 1968, Nixon was offered through CIA conduit Tom Pappas and other sources the funding he needed for the election if he took Agnew as vice president. And then I went on to the Young Americans for Freedom, which I won't go into tonight, which are the group of Robert Morris and Colonel Willoughby and Ronald Reagan and the people that came from Germany to Dallas and were a part of the John Kennedy assassination that I've done many times. Now, there was a small article, it doesn't have to be very big, just a little article in the magazine section of the Monterey Herald and some syndicated papers, the Family Weekly, just yesterday. And it's from the Ask Editors. Los Angeles, this is the story, just two paragraphs, really. There's a major drug scandal brewing in Hollywood, and sources involved say that when it breaks, the resulting controversy will be one of the messiest in decades. That's some competition. Sources close to the case say investigators have turned up evidence that high-ranking police department officials have been directly involved in drug traffic. This is what I said with Jack Eggers and Bobby Hall and Lewis Tackwood. And the drugs that were supplied to the rock musicians or the Lenny Bruces and the Janis Joplins. Let's go back to what they say, that the police are involved in drug trafficking. Additionally, the investigators have learned that Kathy Smith, indicted by a grand jury on a charge of administering a fatal dose of heroin and cocaine to actor John Belushi, obtained those drugs from a girlfriend of a high-ranking police official. That's the John Belushi that felt sorry for El Salvador. That's the John Belushi that got on NBC to make fun of Henry Kissinger with his marvelous comedies on Saturday Night Live. The John Belushi who works not only for NBC, but so does Johnny Carson with his CIA connections to Robert Duran and Jack Kotain and the whole makeup of his bank that's in scandalous headlines right now. And I'll do more, if not tonight, later. That the kind of drugs that these people get that are fatal when they are particularly political, I have been suspicious of, and a lot of people say, well, you know Janis was on drugs. You knew Belushi took drugs. He may have taken drugs. I had an argument with a friend about that in New York who was a friend of his. He says, oh, get off of it. Belushi took drugs. That's not the point. If Jackie Smith is on probation and she leaves the scene or stays and calls 911 and says he dies suddenly and there's not a trace of drugs because she can clear them all out. But what she did was that she left after he was dead, took a phone call, came back 2 hours later with a spoon and white cocaine and hands it to the police. So at that point, they could have put her in jail. But the police, if you remember the tapes I did, they couldn't arrest her because I knew she worked with the Los Angeles Police Department. So they let her go to Canada. On the way to Canada, she almost had a fatal car crash. She broke some ribs. She got up to Canada and she wrote a story for the National Enquirer on how she killed John Belushi. And the LAPDs were frantic. They don't want her back for trial. She's opened her big mouth. So finally they had a grand jury hearing and she was indicted, but they haven't extradited her. On top of the Johnny Carson and the Henry Bushkin story and what's coming out, and Mr. Saxon was coming out of L.A. with the cocaine connections in the Cayman Islands and the Bahamas and Colombia and the Klaus Barbie links down in South America to Bolivia. You can believe they don't want this to unravel. Be interesting to see how far this goes, but that was in the paper yesterday. Another article in the paper that something I've been harping on for a long time, from the Washington Post. This is September 18th, 1983. It's about war in space. On the front page, it says, United States prepares for the day when war may be waged in space. They're planning this, and Representative Ken Kramer, K-R-A-M-E-R, from Colorado, wants to change the name of the Air Force, he's serious, to the U.S. Aerospace Force, that the Defense Intelligence Agency and all powers that be and NASA want it, and he has a symbol of how it will look, the new emblem, the U.S. Aerospace Force. And then in big black letters, it says, military prepares for the day when those who control space can expect to control the entire world. Now, whenever I'm asked about the John Kennedy assassination or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King, I say, get the book Project Paperclip and read how the Nazi scientists were brought to this country via Richard Nixon and a lot of other people in office today, and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger. Project Paperclip, the goal of those Germans was to have the Fourth Reich and to control the world. And this time they were going to do it so that Mr. Dornberger, again, Project Paperclip, to be dumped on the dust heap of the world in Hunga Nuremberg, is taken out to Bell Aerospace. He manages that company that made huge profits in the Vietnam War, over in Iran, and world crisis all over the world, police departments and whatever. The point is that the Dornberger, the war criminal, was there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and his company hired Michael Payne, the host and safe house for Lee and Marina Oswald. And I've talked about Project Paperclip and Alternative 3 for a long, long time, and any of you who want the tapes of those broadcasts can get them. Here's another horror story. You'll think that I'm making this up because it's close to Halloween, but I'm not. This is all in one week's news. They came out different days, but I just read them all in the past week since I was with you last week. Wall Street Journal, September 26, 1983. The used tool company agrees to merge with W.R. Grace & Company. That should be making the headlines inches high. Used Tool Company was the company that Howard Hughes' father formed when he invented the tool bit that J. Paul Getty said, without that bit, without what his father had invented, we would all still be making quarters somewhere else that we couldn't. We'd have to dig the oil with our hands. This tool bit company was very valuable. It began the career of Howard Hughes in Houston, Texas. And when the tool company was sold in 1972, there was no Howard. From what I can see or what I've studied, he was deep sixed by Onassis, as I wrote for Playgirl a long time ago, over off of Greek Island. And Vance Cooper was the double in that grave. And the point about the Hughes story is that I said that the Howard Hughes organization, through Carl Boyer, B-Y-O-I-R, and the public relations firm, has been the umbrella for the Fourth Reich, along with the space project, along with all the other things I'm telling you, for the Nazification of America. And now we have Mr. J. Peter Grace from the W.R. Grace Company, who appointed John Reese to be on Western Goals to gather and suck in information, hundreds of millions of pieces they could put into, I don't know how many, if there's 2 million names, the LAPD alone. Western Goals, Larry McDonald's outfit, has computers. It's been verified in many other cities like Chicago, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Los Angeles. They can have computers in every major city in the United States and feed every police department and put names into these computers. So that Grace not only is a close associate of the aging, I call aging, Otto Ambrose, the chemist from I.G. Farben, the man who created slave labor and extermination and gas camps. And we have the Auschwitz Pope, who was an actor at Solvay Chemical, working for I.G. Farben, and Hermann Apps of the Deutsche Bank, the man who supported Hitler and wrote the paychecks, is a banker for the Vatican. Don't you see what is coming down now with the man who wrote for Himmler? And for Hitler, the paychecks is a financier with the Pope in the Vatican. Mr. J. Peter Grace works with Edward Teller and Admiral Moore and the late Larry McDonald and John Reese and the top military brass who funnel in for the police departments. And now the tool company is to merge. And the interesting thing is that they said they would merge now because they each lost a total of $120 million last year. Now, is that $120 million on the books, or did that buy our congressman or put the Larry McDonalds into Congress? I'm sure it did. Used Tool Company lost $40 million. or Grace lost $20 million and Hughes lost $80 million. And do you really believe that they lost it any more than the Boston Cardinal Cushing lost $40 million when he turned over his diocese? We'll take a one-minute break now and then get back to the second half of this litany of horrors. And would you believe it? It even gets worse.